The American Cancer Society says it is not currently rethinking its stance on cancer screening. As was widely reported on Wednesday, the society continually revises its screening recommendations and issues new guidelines every year, usually in January. The Cancer Society revised its prostate cancer screening guidelines several months ago to emphasize the fact that it does not recommend PSA screening for everyone, but does recommend that men have informed discussions with healthcare professionals before embarking on a screening program. Also, the Cancer Society has never maintained that mammography screening for breast cancer is perfect as well. In a moment, we'll be talking with Dr. Len Saputo, a return to healing on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Len Saputo, doctor, 1965 graduate of Duke University's Medical School, board certified in internal medicine, author of the most recent book, A Return to Healing, Healthcare Reform, The Future of Medicine. And we're going to chat, take calls this hour, with Dr. Len Saputo. Good morning, Len. How are you?
Good morning, George. I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Good. We got you up and early this morning, huh?
Yeah, a nice early start.
A house call by a doctor.
That's about time, isn't it?
Lots to go. I want to talk with you about a lot of healthcare issues, and we'll take some phone calls in just a moment from listeners, but this vagueness of this American Cancer Society, whether it's rethinking its cancer screening testing or not. First it was reported, then it was reported they didn't do it. What's going on there?
You know, I was really proud of Dr. Brawley. I thought transparency at last, and that we're going to get a clear picture of the limitations on mammography and the PA tests and some other PSA tests and some other things. And then within a few hours of the time he came out with this statement, they started hedging and saying that there were problems with what he said and that they were sticking to what they originally thought. And it led me to wonder, why would they do something like that? What's the point of it? Is there some kind of conflict of interest? Do they have an affiliation with somebody that makes it to their advantage to support a position like that? And today my son David did some research and came up with some very interesting statistics that kind of blew me away. I found that behind all this, there is a connection of Big Pharma with the American Cancer Society. That surprised me. And some of the data showed that a couple of years ago, AstraZeneca donated $7 million for a facility that sounded like a really good thing. They call it the AstraZeneca Hope Lodge Centers. They have 23 of these across the United States. And in this particular article, they donated $7 million for each facility to help people to be able to get the treatment they might otherwise not be able to get because of the distance between the treating facility and where they lived. And they figured that it would cost them about maybe $150 million plus the miscellany expenses to be able to put up one of these facilities. Now, each facility can handle about 1,500 people a year at an estimated cost of maybe $100,000 for the chemotherapy that they might not have sold if the patients couldn't get it. That's the $150 million a year that's their cost. Over 30 years, that's $4.5 billion per facility. There are 23 facilities. It comes to a $103 billion project for a startup cost of $150 million. Now I began to see what was going on. The American Cancer Society is taking the money as a nonprofit. How much of that is actually going to build these facilities is a good question. And all of a sudden, you see the connection between the American Cancer Society and Big Pharma. So what it looks like to me is that if we limit the number of mammograms that we do or the number of PSA tests that we do, we're going to have far fewer people who are going to have a cancer at least suspected.
That's right.
Yeah. And if that's the case, then it's going to cost them huge amounts of money. And you just look at this as a business project, and it makes a lot of sense. So I think, George, that may be what's happening.
That's sad, isn't it, Len?
Well, it shows you that the problems that we're dealing with in this country have to do with our own development as humanity. We should be worried about trying to help people and to be with them and support them and guide them, not to try to accumulate massive sums of money that just make us more independent and adversarial. It's a true shame, George. I agree with you.
I think when you were on with me when we were just doing a quick news item back in September, somebody had called earlier and talked about how, you know, they had cancer and through their PSA test. It was spotted. And I guess for him it worked, but for some it doesn't. Huh?
Well, you wouldn't even really know because somebody told him that they saved his life. Did they? I mean, do the doctors really know in that setting? There are so many prostate cancers that are operated on that are relatively non-malignant, meaning that maybe 2% of them will go on and cause death, the other 98% not. And that's the reason why this PSA test is being questioned. Do you really want to know the answer to something that's not likely to help you and is going to get you involved with all the worry that goes with it? It's the same thing with ductal carcinoma in situ in women with breast cancer. They're very similar diseases. Now, to find that you have this is bad news for you. You're pretty safe that you could watch and wait and see how things go if you had the right test to follow. And if we did that, we'd be way ahead of the game than if we just assumed that if we had a cancer in us, it might be a problem that we had to go ahead and treat it. Again, that's where Big Pharma comes in. And I think it tries to support selling its chemotherapy at any cost.
Len, in your book, A Return to Healing, Healthcare Reform and the Future of Medicine, what was your overall theme?
Well, there were a lot of themes in that, George. It was basically a story of my life as a doctor over 40 years, starting with my training. And some of the things that went into that training that really weren't a good thing for people to pick up to go through if they want to be healers. It also showed us the lack of limitation in our ability to trust the medical research that's published in our mainstream journals. That's a tragedy. It looks at the problems with Big Pharma, the problems with the insurance industry, the corruption with the FDA, and of course, Congress's relationship with all that is totally corrupt. It talks about some of the things that we can do to make healthcare better in this country. Talk about true healthcare reform. What we don't need in this country is just insurance reform or economic reform. We need a true paradigm shift, which means that we need to move towards wellness and prevention. Yes, everybody needs to be insured. There are 47 million working Americans who are uninsured. They can't qualify for Medicaid because they make too much money and they can't afford insurance. So it goes into the details that will help you to understand what's going on with this healthcare reform issue that we're struggling with. What's going on behind the scenes? What do you need to know to understand it? And then to wake up as American citizens and take responsibility. That's what it's about, George.
Well, and you're right. You know, the no person should be denied treatment because they don't have insurance. I mean, we've got to be able to help people first and foremost. And I understand how people say, well, you know, we can't afford all this. But when we're talking about basics, people need to be helped.
Yeah. Well, it's a right. And it's not like we would have to spend that much money. You know, we spend $2.3 trillion a year. We could cut that down to a few hundred billion easily if we shifted our approach to a wellness paradigm. And we get back to the big problem we talked about at the start. There's no transparency in seeing where the dollars are going. And when you do dig out and get that information, you find out that it's not to your advantage because it's going to, towards keeping people sick. It's not going towards keeping us well. We need to shift our thinking so that we do lifestyle things first. You know, just eat the right foods, exercise, sleep right, reduce your stress levels, keep your weight where it should be, and above all, have a meaningful purpose in your life. If you do all those things, healthcare costs would scream down. It would be a matter of 3 or 4 years, we'd look at a 75% reduction in what we have to spend. And that doesn't mean we still wouldn't have a lot of sick people that need to be treated. We would. And I would see this as a process over a decade of being what this country needs to do if it wants to really save money, really give good health care to people, and help them take responsibility for what they have to do to be well. That's where the answers are. But nobody's looking at that much.
I assume you're also a booster of alternative medicine in conjunction with mainstream medicine.
Yeah, I'm an integrative guy. I mean, we've got 50% of America with a chronic disease. And that shows you that we've totally failed at making people well. And it's not like it's a failure of mainstream medicine. It's a failure of all disciplines. It doesn't matter which one. Nobody solved it. We might do better if we worked as teams and did integrative care. and had people from different disciplines on the same team supporting individual patients. And then looking again, always, to lifestyle is the first thing.
Is there a percent of people who have affliction, some kind of a problem? Is it 4 out of 10, 7 out of 10,
yeah.
2 out of 10? What do you
yeah.
think?
Well, there's an epidemic of chronic diseases. It's about 50% now. So
we're
looking
at things. That's
huge. Oh, yeah. I mean, 50% of us are sick. And if you look at people over the age of 65, it's common to be on several medicines, I mean, 4 or 5 medicines a day, and to have at least one chronic disease and most more than one. Those are not signs of a system that works. Those are signs of a system that doesn't work, that's focused on economics. If you want an economic stimulus package, healthcare is your answer.
I have redundant doctors in L.A. and in St. Louis. I just think it's smart to do that because I'm always in two different places.
Mm-hmm.
And they think it's kind of neat, but funny, too, because, you know, they share charts back and forth and everything else.
Second opinions, which is good. What would be even better is to have a team of practitioners of different disciplines working together. It's a concept called health medicine that I basically invented with a group of people in the early 1990s. And sometime we'll have to do a show on that. It looks at how you can do integrative, holistic, person-centered preventive care. And we've come up with some beautiful things over the last 15 years that we've taken into clinical practice in my own practice in Walnut Creek.
I've got to tell you, with my daughter, I had to take her to the hospital several weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Scared the heck out of me.
She's fine,
but you hate doing that. But I've got to tell you, going on the internet and just searching for afflictions and remedies and what's wrong, what's right, is absolutely marvelous. I mean,
yeah.
It's like having a degree in medicine. Not quite, but I mean, it really helps, doesn't it?
In a lot of ways, George, it's better, because you're getting one point of view from your doctor. And listen, I don't want to put doctors down. I mean,
you're one.
Absolutely. I'm proud to be a doctor, especially the way I go about it. But I'm not proud of the people who have set up the system to be the way it is. I mean, we're the good guys, the doctors. We go through the training. We learn the things they teach us, but it's all under the hands of Big Pharma. I mean, they do the research. They spend twice as much money as the National Institutes of Health does. It's spending $60 billion a year in research. The NIH spends something like $25 billion. And they regulate the research that comes out. They interpret the studies. They determine what they'll say. They lie outright. I mean, Marcia Angel's studies are beautiful. This is the Harvard doctor who was the chief editor of the New England Journal of Medicine for 2 decades, who finally quit her job and said, this has got to stop. I can't stand the low quality of stuff that's going to my journals. And our doctors depend on that to save our lives. So it's not their fault. And the technologies do fantastic things. It's just that we shouldn't wait till we get sick. We should go ahead.
How do these things happen, though? Guy goes in for stomach operation. The doctor leaves the scalpel in there, and they find it later. Or a guy's got gangrene on his leg. He's got to get it cut off. They cut off the wrong leg. How do these things happen?
We got a very overworked business, okay? It's run by HMOs. Time is money. Everybody's being maximized to their work ethic the most that they can. And when you're doing too much, you're going to make mistakes. It's the same old story with the interns and residents who are working 80 hours a week. We used to work 120 hours a week, and they finally did some studies. They got really smart about it, George. They thought, we'll do some studies and see if we can prove it. It's like, come on, Einstein. You need a study to say that if you've been up 36 hours and you're still working on patients and doing surgeries, that that's going to be a safe thing to do? It's remarkable. It's remarkable.
It is. It truly is. And, when you go into... And you get an awakening when you go into an emergency room and look at all the people who come in who have all kinds of problems. And I mean, they're overloaded, these places. You've got a couple people as receptionists trying to jockey these people all over the place. It's amazing. Yet you look at the doctors and the nurses who are there working, and they're scurrying and they're trying to do the best they can.
Yeah.
But it's difficult.
They're good people doing good work. Those emergency room doctors, I take my hat off to. They're saving all kinds of lives. People come in with gunshot wounds and auto accidents and fractures and acute heart attacks. And our technology is amazing. We just shouldn't get sick in the first place. Now, some of you can't avoid. You always need to have the doctors there. And I'm so proud of those guys. Same thing with the ICU and CCU guys and people that are hospitalized. These doctors are fantastic. But medicine's become corporatized. And so what we have is a system that overworks them as much as they can. I mean, the docs now have, what, 7 minutes or 8 minutes in general practice to turn over one patient to go to the next. They might see 40 patients in a day.
Yeah, how can you all over the place.
How can you deal with their underlying psycho-spiritual issues, the things that actually led to their being sick? You know, listen to their whole story. Where's all that? That's out the window.
In the old days when the doctor used to walk around with his chart, his medical chart,
right.
Now everything at least is in a computer.
Yep.
And his entire staff, for example, can see what's going on. In the old days, you had that file. Nobody knew what was going on.
Exactly.
That's
well,
helped.
There's some advantages to having computerized records. There are some dangers to it, too, because somebody has access to your stuff.
That's the problem.
And absolutely. That worries me a great deal. But I like the idea of being, if you could keep that information totally away from certain people, I would have no problem with it because we could do nice outcome studies on research to see how our patients are doing. We could track everybody. But you can track them in ways that you don't want to be tracked too. And I don't know where you get that guarantee. And today, the way things are going with our government, I worry about that because things aren't transparent. We don't know what happens. We still don't know what happened back in the 60s when Kennedy died. We still don't have that information.
No, some people do, but we don't. That's for sure.
Exactly.
I mean, it's strange. If you could fix one thing right now about healthcare or medicine in general, what would it be?
Prevention. Definitely lifestyle. Let's get campaigns out, starting from the grassroots level. Let's do eating. Let's teach people how to eat right and make food available. Let's subsidize healthy food and stop subsidizing high fructose corn syrup, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
We have subsidized the corn industry. Let's do something about exercise programs, and let's do it from the bottom up and the top down. Let's make sure that we've got an exercise program for every city in America that supports that and advertises it. Let's make sure that we can lower our expectations of what we need to do so not so much stress and we can get 8 hours of sleep a night. Let's not work more than 40 hours a week or work less than that. Let's find out what a meaningful purpose in our life is and let's move towards that. We get so separated from these things that these aren't Einsteinian concepts. I mean, Hippocrates talked about this 2,500 years ago. And I think it's possible for us to adopt some of those things, but there are obstacles in the way. Congress is not listening to us or supporting us. They're in bed with corporate America, and as long as they're in bed with corporate America, they're going to support corporate America at our expense. And so things happen to us, and we don't get what we want. I mean, why doesn't America have a single-payer system? 70% of Americans in most of the big polls want that.
Yeah.
And yet Congress isn't. It's not even there yet to look at as something that's a real entity, even though I have some faith that Barack Obama will get that. I think he will. I sure pray that he will.
I sure hope something happens.
Yeah, we need some competition to wake up the insurance companies.
Yeah, absolutely. I broke down today, and I bought some Halloween candy for the kids that come to the house.
Yeah, once a year, okay.
I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it, Len, but I said, you know what? I'll do it. So I bought a couple bags.
Yeah.
And now I'm panicking that I'm not going to give it all away because I don't want to see all that candy in the house.
Yeah, I know. That's
tempting.
Problem. But you still have to be human. There's a place for being human. We can eat ice cream, okay, once in a while. We can have candy bars once in a while. But we can eat good food most of the time. And we can exercise every day. And if everybody supports that and that's what we do, we're in business.
Let's take some phone calls with you when we come right back. Dr. Len Saputo, our guest, you've heard what we've been talking about. Boy, it has not stopped raining here in St. Louis in days. Unbelievable. It doesn't stop. Fast blast in from Monica in Las Vegas, who says she's starving. What can she eat in the wee hours? Now, that's not a bad question for Dr. Saputo when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie in the wee hours with Dr. Len Saputo. Okay, Len, how do we help out? Like Monica, she's got a craving in the wee hours. What does she do?
Well, I don't know why she has a craving in the wee hours, but a lot of people do because they've got other things on their mind that are stressful. And sometimes eating is the comfort. A lot of us are addicted to carbohydrates. And when our blood sugars go up and down, it tends to lead to eating too. So my suggestion for her is that she gives some thought to maybe eating, if she's going to eat in the middle of the night, foods that are low carb diet in the low carbohydrate classification, maybe more vegetables than anything else. And if she knows she's going to do it, even prepare something so that when she gets up in the middle of the night, she can. And she can have what she's prepared.
What about a pizza at 4 in the morning?
I don't think that's too good. You have to take your Pepsid first, remember? Take your Pepsid, then you can eat the whole pizza. That's what the ad says.
That's what it says.
Yeah, so that's what I do. And then she probably has a reason she's not sleeping well at night, and she might want to look inside to try and find what some of those reasons are. Usually that takes a little bit of help from the outside.
Well, they could be just listening to this program.
You know? There you go. They're probably night workers and getting hungry. That's it.
Absolutely. Well, you cannot imagine the amount of healthcare professionals, law enforcement officers, security folks who listen to this program every night, Len. It's huge.
Oh, this is the biggest radio show in America, George. I mean, I listen to it sometimes at night, too, when I'm up late. Absolutely.
What are you doing up so late?
Usually working. You know, I'm really totally committed to changing healthcare in this country, and healthcare reform is absolutely critical to me.
What state are you in, though?
In California. I live near San Francisco.
Okay, so it's only about 1:40 in the morning your time.
Yeah, not too bad.
No. Let's go to Bill in Niagara Falls, Canada. Hey, Bill, take it away. Go ahead, Bill.
Good morning, George and
Hi.
Doctor. I just wanted to make a couple points. My son plays baseball in Buffalo over the river, and about 10 to 20% of the parents there are either overweight or morbidly obese. And I think that's one of the biggest health problems you have in your country is you guys eat too much, like you say, eat too many carbs and soft drinks, and you guys have to take personal responsibility for your own health. And I think that will help your healthcare system. The other point I wanted to make was I know you're having this debate about single payer. It's in our country we have great health care. No one is dying in the streets. No one is waiting for life-saving operations. You have to take the profit out of health care. The only people who should be making money in health care are the practitioners, the doctors and the nurses, not the stockholders. And, doctor, you're right on the dot with all your comments. You're a great doctor, and keep it up.
Thank you, Bill. It's thank you for the call, too. First of all, the overeating problem is a disaster for sure. And what we need are programs where people can actually participate in them that are working. We're doing something in Walnut Creek, and I would suggest you go to wellnesscitychallenge.com, wellnesscitychallenge.com. We're a grassroots nonprofit organization who have made big changes in our local community. We've convinced all 19 mayors of our county to take a pledge to not include in any meals that they serve, whether it's a meal or in a vending machine, that has high fructose corn syrup or another sugar in the first three ingredients, that has any trans fats, or has too little fiber, which means you're going to have more food that looks like food, not something in a package. And that's catching. We'll next go to the schools in our county and at the state level, and also go to our restaurants with a healthy restaurant association, and God forbid our hospitals take our advice. Some of our patients might be getting healthier sooner. So we need programs at the grassroots level. The government is letting us down there, so we have to take that responsibility. And this program is a beauty, so take a look at that. Now, as far as the single-payer stuff is concerned, you know, a lot of people in the U.S., mostly the insurance companies, are doing something terrible. They're lying about what goes on in Canada. When we look at a survey that came out in the last month or so of the top 16 industrialized countries in the world, and they were rated on the basis of the overall quality of their care and availability, Canada was ranked 10th. So you might say, well, they could do better. The U.S. was ranked 16th.
Oh, my God.
So we have a lot to do.
Unacceptable.
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
Yeah, well, That's, you know, we have to change our ways. We're ranked 37th in the world overall by the World Health Organization. And it's because we're an economy, not a democracy. We're more interested in the money than we are in providing the service.
I have a simple belief system, Len, that you do several things as an individual. One is take care of your own health. The second is love of friends and family.
Oh,
those two things are the most important. And I have decided that health is the most important, with love and everything else right behind it.
Yeah,
but if you're not healthy, how can you help your family?
That's right. That's right. Well, I would look at that absolutely that way too, and we've got to get healthy, and we have to change the way we live. You know, we've been trained by our community to become so connected to materialism that we forget about the people that live next door, or the people that are sick, or the underprivileged, or people that live in the ghetto, or people like your Children's International that you're talking about. We forget about them because we don't see them. And unless we come back to increasing the level of humanity to a place where we're loving and concerned and want to be with people and not just get them to do things to help us, we're going to be living like the savages that we are. You know, when Mother Teresa went to New York City, I don't know how many years ago that was, she was impressed with the wealth. She said, what an incredible place. But never have I seen such a depraved place in terms of the level of humanity.
Len, when people talk with you about health and health care, I'm not even talking about insurance now, but health care in general, what are their biggest concerns about themselves?
Well, first of all, they're sick. I mean, people are sick. And I think most people are anxious and they're depressed. There's an epidemic of frustration in this country because we're working too hard. We're too much in the fast track. We forgot about your two rules, George, about taking care of our health and then being committed to live in community with our friends and family.
Yeah.
And that's what's wrong. And that's the message. And, you know, if you just listen to people instead of pull out your prescription pad, they'll tell you what's wrong with them. You just have to be patient. They'll tell you. They'll even tell you what to do. They know the answer. It's incredible. It just takes a compassionate listener who wants to be present with the person and to support them in some way.
I've got a friend who self-diagnoses herself, tells the doctors, in 99.9% of the time, she's right.
Yeah, right. I'll tell you one thing that doesn't happen is doctors in general are not trained to look at the deeper psycho-spiritual needs that affect us so that our bodies are unhealthy. See, what we think and feel and the way we act at a psycho-spiritual level determines how our body's going to respond. So our body's a reflector of where we're stuck in our spiritual path. And a lot of us forget that. And in fact, we're not trained that much. Or maybe we get lip service to it in medical school, but not much. And so we get out now in HMO medicine, and it's like, let's find what prescription works to help that person's problem, get them back on their feet, and go to work. It's not about really trying to figure out what the heck is wrong with this person. It's about suppressing symptoms. Even a psychiatrist, I'm so disappointed in them. They're out doing psychopharmacology to treat people who are anxious and depressed. What happened to listening to people and being with them and supporting them and connecting?
Yeah.
And that's big pharma for you because the insurance industry, because they'll reimburse more if you do psychopharmacology than if you'll listen to somebody.
Absolutely.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yes, it is.
Let's go to Bonanza, Utah. Scott is there on Coast to Coast. Hi, Scott. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. It's great to be on. I heard you talk about security professionals, and that's what I do. I do patrol. So what I was going to ask is, is there any like adverse effects for being up late at night and working all night? Because I noticed that it's a lot harder to lose weight and things like that. I'm not overweight, but sometimes I put on, you know, 5 to 10 more extra pounds if I'm working a lot at night and eating at night versus the daytime.
Okay. Yes, you're right. Absolutely, there are adverse effects. We know that nurses who work the night shift have a higher incidence of cancer, breast cancer.
Wow, that's crazy.
You see, the body has a very sensitive hormonal regulation system, and melatonin is at the center. It's in the pineal gland, and melatonin is the hormone that regulates every other hormone system in the body. And when we mix up our nights and days, It screws up our appetites. It makes us eat more. It puts us at risk for a whole lot of diseases, including hypertension and heart disease and diabetes and cancer. So that doesn't mean you'll get that, Scott, so I'm not trying to tell you that. And somebody's got to work at night, right? And unfortunately, it's you right now. So maybe do the best you can, you know, to do what you might see if you can get a day shift, if it's possible, because you'll be healthier. And that's the way God made us, you know, to sleep at night and to work in the daytime.
I used to breed horses, a little hobby years ago, doctor. Mm-hmm. And in February, when we wanted to start getting them going and in heat, we would turn a light bulb on in their stable.
Mm.
And it tricked them. They thought it was the sun. They thought it was time. And sure enough, they'd get into heat that way.
Wow.
It's truly amazing.
The only light bulb I have, George, goes off in my head.
Well, let's hope it works, right?
It works pretty well.
Good. Let's go to Baltimore, Maryland. First time caller, Steve. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, man.
Hi.
I got in again. I believe it because I've tried over and over to get in. I finally got in. I was wondering, like, I go shopping and everything, and then I know certain things are bad for you, and then I see other things. Hey, what is this? And I was hoping, like for instance, you got sodium phosphate in a lot of baked goods and stuff like that. You're eating aluminum. And John Hopkins did a study, a 15-year study, showed that aluminum causes a dementia, and there's a lot of alternative doctors believe that's the main reason for Alzheimer's. Now, aspartame, it should be totally off the market. It is one of the worst things you can have. It's even worse than high fructose corn syrup.
I agree with you there.
Okay, one of the things I'm going to ask you is, like, when I go shopping, I don't know whether, well, this is good, and then I see some other things I don't know. But I was hoping that there would be a dictionary where you could go in and look and examine the food and say, well, is this good? And then you could open it up to that dictionary and it says good, bad, or whatever, you know.
Steve, I'm going to make it easy for you. I'm going to give you a shortcut here.
All right.
If you buy something that's in a cellophane package that has an ingredients list, that's not food anymore. That's a food product. If it looks like a watermelon or a zucchini or a tomato, buy it. That's food. When it's got long ingredient lists in there, it's going to have things that you don't want. The food is going to be refined and processed.
Preservatives and all this other stuff.
Yeah, you don't want that. And so when you look at things like aspartame and high fructose corn syrup, those are not foods. Those are chemicals. And we got to go back to eating food. If you'll do that, you don't have to worry about knowing where that dictionary is. It tells you all the poisons you're eating are.
And we know the political nature of how aspartame got approved by the FDA.
Oh, Rumsfeld.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and he's done a lot of things that he's going to have to bring tap dancing shoes when he goes to the pearly gates, George.
I'm not sure he'll get up to the pearly gates.
That's a good point.
Reminds me of a story. Well, that's a long joke, but we'll have to get into it another day over a couple wines, Len.
I'd like that, George.
By the way, they say white wine eats away at the enamel of your teeth now, so you got to stick with red.
Yeah, and red stains it a little, but it's got resveratrol. You know, you can't overthink things. There's time for a good wine, whether it's white or red, and time for other things, too, like ice cream and things that you'll end dessert. It's about balance in life, and if we got good balance in our life, we're going to do pretty well. It's just when we get out of balance and we got eating everything in a package, or everything that's out.
When you get out of balance, your psyche changes,
yeah.
Your body changes,
right.
Everything changes.
It's going to complain to you.
Yep. Next up, it's Elliot's turn, Anaheim, California. Hello, Elliot. Go for it.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I want to say to Dr. Salente, thank you very much for your perspective on psycho-spiritual influence on health and the idea of chemicals just passing off as food. Your perspective is, in my experience, unique for doctors who are involved with the typical medical field, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I have two questions, if I could. First off, George, is it all right to mention a health product which I have experience with, which has helped out myself and various other people I've talked to?
Let's not do that yet until we
okay.
have a chance to check it out and go with your question because we've only got 2 minutes left.
Okay. Two things. First is, are you aware of, Dr. Salente, are you aware of the influence of pH balance on overall health?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, okay. I figured you did because your perspective is very holistic. So the second is I wanted to take a slight issue about your comments on single-payer system. You're mentioning how going down to a community level is more helpful with health in general, which I completely agree with. But then you're saying that getting the government involved in a larger role is also more beneficial, and I'm trying to...
Yeah,
I don't see how getting something that's even bigger and more impersonal,
right,
and less in touch with our personal lives,
yeah, I
than
totally
the
get
insurance companies.
Let me help you with that, Elliot. I appreciate the question. It's a very good one. The pH balance one we're in agreement with. I'll let that one go. The single payer system. See, the problem is the insurance companies are not responsible to us. They're responsible to the stockholders. They're doing things that are unacceptable. End of story. They are going to continue to do that. 47% of America already has socialized medicine. It has Medicare, it has Medicaid, and it has the VA system. We're talking about finding a way to put pressure on the insurance company so that we don't have to put up with their antics. If they're cherry-picking their clients, okay, the people that they're going to sell policies to, and they're keeping you from getting an insurance policy because you're sick, or you have an insurance policy and then you get sick and you have to renew it next year and they say, sorry, now we're going to rate you or we're going to kick you out and you're in the middle of the hospital having something happen and they have a cap on how much they'll spend, that's wrong. They're going to continue to do that unless there's competition. Now, it doesn't have to be totally a single payer. I'm okay with the public option. Let's put something out there that requires the insurance company to compete, okay, with a program that doesn't have that in it. It's not giving huge bonuses like $1.5 billion to some CEOs of some insurance companies. That's wrong. I don't like the idea of big business either. I like a big government business. I want to support business in America, but it's got to be responsible business. And that's where you have to make the compromise. And I think that'll probably be something you agree with, Elliot. So thanks for the question.
Let's get your website out, Dr. Len. What is it?
AReturnToHealing.com, and there's a blog on it that might interest people. It goes back to where we started, George, and it talks about the truth and consequences for American Cancer Society regarding the controversial cancer screens. So it's AReturnToHealing.com.
Super. Thanks. Dr. Len Saputo, part of Coast to Coast's regular contributors, and his most recent book, A Return to Healing. Hey, Art Bell's going to fill in for me on Friday into Saturday morning with his special guest, Dr. Stephen Rourke, as they talk about the moon missions and the moon landing. Should be a fascinating classic program. We'll be going live to the Philippines for Art Bell. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safer.